You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.
And now that heart is beating fast, and that's the rhythm I can dance to. I'm mighty glad I've got a chance to, that one big heart that's beating fast. Tomorrow morning, let it rain. Tomorrow morning, let it pour. Tonight, we're in the groove together. Ain't gonna worry about stormy weather. Gonna kick old trouble out the door. Beat out old trouble and drunk. Trouble on the drum, beat out old trouble on the drum, and kick old trouble out the door. Beat me that rhythm on the drum, beat me that rhythm on the drum, beat me that rhythm on the drum, and kick old trouble out the door. Kick him out the door, kick him out the door, kick him out the door, kick him out the
Welcome to Radical Australian Community Radio 3CR. My name is Joseph Toscano. Not that you want to know that. But we've had chaos, pandemonium in here. We thought the guests had stood us up. I've got a new producer who refuses to speak to me called Leith, L-E-I-T-H, a wonderful human being, but a little bit shy. This is her first time and we really made it difficult for her. Luckily, Inez was here to, you know, help overcome my stupidity. So, Jeannie, you're back.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Well, yeah, well, obviously your talent. You're a Eureka Australia medalist from 2024, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
We gave you your medal outside the Flemington houses.
That's right, the towers.
Well, look, I'm confused here. I'm going to ask you a few questions, then we'll talk about what you really came to talk about.
Okay.
All right. And we've got 56 minutes to fill, as you know. Who's you got a bit of security here? What's going on? Who's
that? I brought Duff, my partner.
Oh, he's security, is he?
What? He's my security detail, my bodyguard.
What? Does he think I'm going to be fresh or something?
No, he's here to ward off all the ones that need warding off outside.
Oh, did you bring them with you, did you?
They lurk around.
Now, Jeannie, you tell me your name is E-R-C-E-G. How is that pronounced?
It's Erceg. It's Yugoslavian.
Right.
My husband was, his family were born in Yugoslavia, but all the children were born here in Australia. So that's his name, his surname.
Right. And what was your surname?
Carney.
Carney.
Yes.
I think I can spell that.
Yes, well, that's much easier. We have so much trouble getting people to spell Erceg.
Yeah.
And it's only five letters, but for some reason it seems so difficult.
It starts with E and ends with G. That's why it's difficult. You know, it's how many kids you got?
Seven. One passed away. I have six now, but I had seven.
Seven, right. And any of them at home?
Yes, I have Jasmine at home. Mm. She has a disability, so she's home. And then my other son moved back in. He had a disagreement with his brother, so he moved in over COVID.
Right. So he hasn't left. He hasn't left.
I said he's back and yes.
Yeah, that's good. Now, you've got a checkered past as far as public housing is concerned. I understand you used to live in a public housing. Was it a unit or a house in Paran? Is that correct?
Yes, it was a unit.
And what happened?
Well, it was a block of 120 units there in Paran, so I lived there for 24 years. And then about 10 years before I was relocated, they said that they wanted to demolish the units and put in alternative housing. So for 10 years I knew it was going to be demolished. We had community consultations, they had architect drawings, they had plans. And they found me a place then at Barrett Beacon in Port Melbourne.
Now, let's get back to Paran.
Yes.
Were you offered the right of return?
Yes. I went to inspect the unit last year after it was rebuilt.
Right.
They contacted me because I was part of the community consultation. They already knew that I was had lived
a troublemaker.
There.
Yeah.
Had lived there.
Yeah.
So they contacted me and said, "Did I want to view the unit? Did I want to return?" And first off, I said, "Well, I can't say I want to return until I see the unit." They said, "Fair enough." So they said, "We'll show you your one bedroom unit." And I said, "No, I'm entitled to three bedrooms because there are three adults where I am currently living." And they said, "No, according to the relocation team, there's just you. So you're only entitled to one unit and we will show you a one-bedroom unit."
Mm-hmm.
So they showed me the one-bedroom unit and I said, "Okay." But I said, "I'm entitled to three." And they said, "We'll show you a two-bedroom unit." So they showed me the two-bedroom unit at Perrant. And I said, "Okay, but I'm entitled to three."
Right.
They said, "You should see the relocation team and talk to them about it." And I said, "No, they already know. They know that there's three adults living where I am in Port Melbourne. And they know that there's three of us. No, it's up to them." So then the community group rang me a couple of days later and said, "Oh, yes, you're entitled to three bedrooms. We'll show you the three-bedroom unit."
And were there three bedroom units in
there? There were three bedrooms, but I knocked it back because I really want to live in Port Melbourne.
But you said you went to Barrack Beacon. That had a sticky end.
So, it was so lovely. It was across the road from the beach.
So what happened there?
Well, I was only there for a couple of years, and then they came to my door saying it was going to be demolished.
Just like that?
Just like that.
Wasn't it before Christmas, just a Christmas present?
Yes, it was about 2 weeks before Christmas.
Yeah, it's a great time, isn't it, to tell people they're going to be demolished.
Yes, yes. So they didn't have any other answers because I asked them, "What about community consultation?"
Mm-hmm.
And they said they didn't know anything about that.
Things have moved since Perrant, have they?
Yeah. And I said, "Well, surely I've only been here 2 years. Why did you move me here if you knew that it was going to be demolished?"
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't answer that either.
Right. And so... how long did you stick it out there?
I was there for 4 years.
4 years.
Yes.
What was it like the last year?
The last year was difficult. I had to slowly pack up all my boxes. Difficult with Jasmine because I'd box things up and then
mm-hmm.
Jasmine would open them up to see where her things were.
Right.
But, I mean, a lot of people by then had already moved out.
Right.
So it was probably at least three quarters empty by then.
Mm-hmm. And did they offer you alternative accommodation?
They had shown me a few different properties which I knocked back, but I accepted a house and that's the one I'm in now.
And it's got three bedrooms.
Yes.
Right.
But it's a private house.
They're paying the rent on a private house.
They're paying I pay the same amount of rent that I would pay at Barrack Beacon, and right. They're paying the difference of my rent and the market rent.
And what suburb is it in?
Port Melbourne.
So, they'd be paying $25,000 a year, I reckon, minimum.
Their difference is $200 a week.
$200 a week. So that's $10,000.
And, of course, I'm not the only one.
No, and you've got no security, have you?
No. They told me when I accepted the house that I have to move back to Barrack Beacon when it's rebuilt.
Oh, you had to move back?
Yeah, that I have to accept that I will move back, yes.
What, into three units, three bedroom?
If I have three adults at the time that relocation happens, then I'm entitled to three bedrooms.
What's it like having your social contacts, you know, kind of cut like that?
I said, it's difficult. I said, I had a great neighbour. I remember once I had a package that was supposed to be delivered at home and I missed the delivery, so it was sent to the post office. And it was a big box and I don't have a car, so I asked my neighbour and he said, of course. So he drove me down to pick up my package. It was a great little community.
And at Perrant, were the kids still going to school?
Yes, they were going to the primary school, the kindergarten and the high school there.
So they had that security?
Yes, yes.
Because I think that's what people forget about public housing. It's not the rent at the end of the day, although you pay 25% of your income. It's the fact you've got real security. I mean, I've known people in public housing who've been there for 40 years.
Yes. Well, Margaret had been at Barrack Beacon. She was there for over 30 years.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I was there at Perrant for 24 years. So some of my children grew up there.
Mm.
So they all went to the local primary school there. They all went to the local kindergarten there. They all went through the same school. I wasn't leaving until after they'd all finished primary school and secondary school.
Mm.
But that's the thing, to have them be able to go through all of them, the whole seven, to the same primary school and the high school, it means a lot.
Well, it's a lot. I mean, if you're renting privately, you could be moved every year. And some people are. And kids get totally dislocated. They lose their friends. You know, and they can't go to the same sporting clubs.
No, well, that was a great thing about being so long in Paran. Mm. Everything was stable, the same. Yes, I was very disappointed to leave. But once I came to Port Melbourne, I decided it was even better.
Now, in Paran, when it was redeveloped, was it redeveloped as public housing?
No public housing was rebuilt there.
None?
None.
So there were 120 public housing units.
Yes.
It was rebuilt.
Yes.
And so what was put in its place?
There's about 440 units there.
Mm-hmm.
About 220 are community housing and the rest are private units.
What? For sale? Sold?
No, to rent.
To rent?
Yes.
So who controls them?
Community housing.
So it controls the 400 then?
Yes.
Hmm. And what's the difference between community housing and public housing?
Public housing, to start off with, you only pay 25% of your rent. Community housing is supposed to be set at 30% of what you... your income, but I have heard that it can go higher depending on the community group. You don't have the stability that you have in public housing. You assume that once you go into public housing, you're sort of there for life unless your circumstances change, but community housing, you don't have that same stability.
So it's like private rental, but a little bit less in terms of what you pay.
It's a bit like that, yes.
Mm-hmm. All right, so what was life like for the last year at Barrack Beacon?
It was quieter because I said most of the residents had moved out.
Yep.
But it was difficult knowing that I had to leave.
Right.
And that I had been there for such a short time. And not only that, my balcony had been leaking water into the lounge room for the past year, and they had literally just finished the balcony with imported tiles.
Imported tiles?
When they said it was going to be demolished.
Right. Imported tiles.
Yes, they said we'll have to wait because we're waiting for the tiles to come in, so we can't lay the tiles. Mm. So
how stressful was it for you? Were there people knocking on your door, annoying you, or they just ignored you?
Well, the funny thing was, when I was at Barrack Beacon, the relocation team had set up their office right at the back of my unit, so I could see from my bedroom window their office at the back of us.
Yep.
So because they were so close, they didn't come to the door all the time, but they were in contact all the time.
In contact all the time. Did you feel threatened?
No, but they certainly made it clear that you were to accept certain things, because one time they had rung and they said, oh, we have a property we'd like you to inspect.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, could you come now? And I said, well, no, Jasmine's home. I can't just take Jasmine out on a whim. I need to sort of prepare. Have you told me next week that it'd be fine? I said, I can't go. Mm-hmm. She said, that's fine. We'll give it to somebody else.
Right. That was the end of that.
But she rang back an hour later and she said, oh, the person that we wanted to give it to can't go. Can you go now? And I said, well, I can't go now because the same reason applies when you first rang me up an hour ago.
Right.
And she said, what about if I make it next week? And I said, well, yes, I could make it next week.
Right. Okay. So were you one of the last...
Yes.
Right. Now, I understand, a little birdie has told me that there's a film about all this, about Barrack Beacon. Is that correct?
That is right, yes.
Well, tell us how that came about.
When the residents were moving out, somebody from the housing collective had told a photographer, Isaac, that people were being evicted from Barrack Beacon, and he came round in the last year and spoke to a few residents that were left and took filming of the estate.
Right. Now, I assume Barrack Beacon was a dump and that's why they wanted to knock it down?
No.
It had nothing to do with really real estate value. Nothing to do with real estate value.
No, it was across the road from the beach.
At Port Melbourne.
Yes.
Mm.
Oh, it was a corner block. So I lived on the boulevard, which was
on the boulevard. I love that.
That was my address, the boulevard Port Melbourne. So my unit actually faced the beach, so I could hear the waves and see the ocean. Mm. So because it was a corner block, those at the back couldn't see the ocean or hear the waves, but they were still, you know, a minute away from the beach. Yeah. No, they were in great condition. They were concrete.
And they were relatively new, weren't they?
They were 40 years old.
40 years old. And how many units were there?
89.
And I assume, were they 16 stories high or something like that?
No, the most was two stories.
Two stories. And yes. I understand the Barrack Beacon estate was based on some architectural Italian design.
Yes, I'm not too too knowledgeable about that, but Margaret had said yes that it was.
Yeah, there was when they were trying to build public housing 40 years ago, they were trying to not build suicide towers like they used to call suicide towers like they do now, and they were looking for ways of building community friendly public housing where people had space where they could enjoy things, and it was off an Italian planned public housing community.
Well, it certainly was like that because what they did was they built a small number of units, then they had a grassy patch and maybe a playground in between, and then another block of flats, and then another green block of land, and then another block of units.
So, and were there many kids, many families in Barrack
Beacon? There were quite a few families. They used the playground because that was at the back of my unit as well.
Right. So you got the sea and the kids.
Yes.
So...
I just wanted to say, when I went to view the unit at, because I was part of the community consultation group, they showed me one of the private rentals before, that was the last session of the community consultation, but they told me that they were going to be built with a lifespan of 40 years and they were going to be demolished again after 40 years.
That's at Barrack Beacon or Paran?
At Paran.
At Paran, 40 years. Yes. That's the life.
Yes, they said they were only going to be built with a lifespan of 40 years.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Now, tell us about the film. You've got plenty of time. how did you get involved?
Well, because I was one of the last residents left, they came and took some film of me walking around the estate, and actually they've got me. I was outside my gate at Barrack Beacon and I had already moved to the house, and I had a lovely camellia tree in my front yard, and I wanted to go in there and take some flowers off the tree before the tree was bulldozed down. But they'd secured the fence so I couldn't get in there, so they'd locked me out of my own place. Even though I had the keys and they said that I had till Monday.
Yes.
They had still locked me out and I couldn't even get in.
Well, I'm very pleased to see the back of you. And obviously, they were going to lock things up. So tell us about the film. You know how long it is?
Goes for half an hour.
And who were the people involved? You?
Well, Kerry is one of the people involved. She didn't live at
And Kerry who?
Kerry, she was part of the housing collective.
Right.
So she was around there with Isaac, and she had told him about the estate and the fact that the residents were leaving there and it was going to be demolished. So she had walked around the estate, I think, with Isaac to show him how great it was. And she had pointed out that it was going to be community housing rebuilt there and no public housing. And I was in the film. There was a couple of residents at the back of the estate. They didn't want their faces shown in the film, but they had talked about what was happening and the fact that their grandmother had died, and they had been there since their grandmother was there, so they'd been there for a long time. And there were two others that they had talked to, and they'd been there for a long time as well.
Right. And was Margaret involved?
Yes, and Margaret was in it as well, yeah. She was there with her dog Patchett in the lounge room, yes.
Mm. And she was the last one, obviously.
She was the last resident.
And she was actually evicted.
Yes, she was.
Yeah. So there's a big public house. Obviously the 44 towers are up for demolition. Can you bring us up to speed on what's happening?
Well, there have been numerous vigils outside 12 Holland Court, which is one of the first block of towers to be demolished. So at this point, there's five families left. The rest have been relocated. And I think they're there taking a stand. They haven't been offered anything suitable. They don't want to leave.
Right. And tell us about the vigils.
They've been held the past couple of months, 7:30 to 9 in the morning, and then again sometimes in the afternoon, 4:30 to 6.
Mm-hmm.
People hold banners out by the side of the road and cars often honk in support of their signs that saying they shouldn't be demolished.
I think people forget. They say, well, why don't the public residents fight back? And what people forget is how tenuous your existence is when you're on a social security benefit and all of a sudden they're going to say to you, well, you need to move.
Yes.
And if you don't move, who knows what's going to happen to you.
And I think a lot of the people that are actually live in the towers don't, they don't originally come from Australia. They come from other countries where if you fight against the government or police, then you don't know what's going to happen to you. So they don't feel that they can speak out.
Yeah. Or people are concerned that they're not going to have accommodation.
That's
especially
right.
if they've got children.
Yes.
Especially you're on a limited income.
Yes.
And the other great tragedy I find in this so-called debate is the fact that the usual organisations which would have stood up for public housing tenants have disappeared because they've been bought out because they're running these community housing and affordable housing projects. So you don't see the churches there, do you?
No, I don't know. I mean, community groups seem to be taking over now. I think that will be the way that gradually all public housing will go, and it'll be taken over by community housing.
Yeah, well, that's it. You privatise the... You privatise the...
Well, the government, I don't think, wants to pay for the maintenance.
No, no. Have you been back to Barrack Beacon?
Oh, I go past it all the time because I walk down past it to go to Bay Street to the shopping centre.
Well, tell us what's happening. Tell us what's happening.
The building is quick as lightning there.
Quick as lightning?
Yeah, they're going like full steam ahead.
What, concrete slab after concrete slab?
Yeah, it looks like a jail. Oh, yes, because the social housing are going in two high-rise towers. One has 9 levels and the other one has 11. And then the private housing is at the back and they only have 3 and 4 stories.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes, nice for them.
It's like Ashwood. You heard what happened at Ashwood years ago?
No.
The private. It was public. It was public space. This was that was the first big relocation.
Yes.
It was about a decade ago, and public housing was put at the back, out of sight.
Yes.
And the nice units were put at the front.
Yes.
And they were promised all these things, and none of them came about.
Yes.
So. You're talking about suicide towers being built where Barrack Beacon was.
Yes, I mean, it was so nice. There was only 2 levels of housing. You only had ground floor and then you had someone above you.
Mm.
In the boulevard, all the ones in the front, we didn't have anybody above us. It was just only some of them. But it was so much space, you know, lots of car parking space there, great neighbours. Yes.
You know why there are all these public housing units on the... foreshore in Port Melbourne and Williamstown. Do you know the history behind that?
No.
Well, it's quite interesting. In the 70s, before the councils were amalgamated, there were smaller councils, and I think it was the Port Melbourne Council and the Williamstown Council. Most of the councillors were quite radical people. I remember that Anne Fay, who's still alive, was the mayor of, I think it was the Port Melbourne Council, and they demanded that people on limited incomes, it was their policy, should have the same rights to a view and access to a beach as everybody else because they had many medical issues and the sea air would be of benefit to them. So if it wasn't for these activists in the 70s,
oh, really?
You wouldn't have those high-rise buildings.
Well, it was interesting. Once demolition was announced and it went online that people were moving from there, people would come out and say, well, you shouldn't be living there in the first place. You shouldn't be living across the road from the beach. Only rich people should be living there.
Really?
You need to go out and live in the country.
That's right.
That's what they said.
Yeah, they send you to Mafra or somewhere.
Anywhere but there.
Anywhere but there because you're blocking their view.
Yes.
Now, I understand that you've had private neighbours who lived in quite expensive complexes across the road from Barrack Beacon.
Yes.
Now, I assume they knocked on the door and offered their full support to you?
No.
Are you kidding me?
No, because it didn't. I don't think they thought that it affected them. They only the residents around Barrack Beacon only set up a committee after it was demolished, and then all these issues started coming up about high rises there, lack of car parking spaces.
Ooh.
The car parking spaces are going to be taken in the street, so it's affecting them.
Yeah.
Asbestos removal. Yes, once it affected them, then they started to become involved.
They become involved.
Unfortunately.
And so obviously they're very pleased that their property has been devalued. Very pleased, I assume. So you got no assistance from other residents, did you? I mean, non-public housing residents.
No.
None?
No.
And you'd been there for almost 40 years, the Barrack Beacon residents.
Well, I'd only been there 4 years.
No, but I mean as...
Oh, yes, a lot of the residents have been there a long time, yes.
Yeah,
no, I think they were quite happy for them to go.
Right. But
really?
You weren't troublemakers.
No, no, but the trouble is you only need one person who acts differently or who is crazy in public housing and you get tarred with the same brush.
Brush, yeah.
That you're all mad and you're getting a free ride.
And you're losers.
You shouldn't be living there. Go and get a job.
What they don't understand is the fact that the state provides public housing for people who can't buy private housing or even afford rents. It means that not only do you provide a stable environment for people in that situation, but more importantly, you provide a stable environment for their children, and it's less likely they'll get involved in crime and antisocial behaviour.
That's right, but I don't think people see that.
Well, they should, shouldn't they?
They should, but they don't.
Yeah. I mean, that was the whole purpose. I mean, there's been a long history of public housing in Victoria.
Yes.
I mean, as you know, after the Second World War, the veterans, both male and female, who returned were billeted on the grounds of the MCG in tents.
Yes.
And they were billeted in the Botanic Gardens. There are pictures mid-40s to late 40s of returned servicemen and women in this situation, and they demanded public housing. And that's when you got the Commonwealth government, the state governments, providing housing for veterans. So there's a long history, you know, of that struggle. But as I said, all the allies, people in the public housing sector have gone.
Yes.
And I remember in the 80s, there was a great innovation, which many of my patients who found themselves in difficult circumstances because of their physical disabilities, they were given spot-purchased housing.
Ah, yes.
So all around Melbourne, there are spot-purchased houses from the 1980s and 1990s because the Kane government realised that if you're going to put people with issues together in a huge, you know, complex, you're going to get problems.
Yes, I know my daughter, she was living in a block of units. There were only seven there, and her unit was the only one that was owned by the Department of the Housing. The rest were private rentals.
That's right. That's spot purchasing houses, units.
Yes.
And in many ways, it's a cheaper way of providing public housing. And what it means is, I mean, I said I've got one couple who've had two children and he's a quadriplegic and they're still in the house, and they've been able to make these incredible contacts with their neighbours who accept their public housing tenants, and they're no different to them.
Yes.
And it, what it does is, I think the spot purchasing program, what it does is it actually de-demonises public housing tenants because they're just part of a general community. That's just my opinion. Now, the film.
Yes.
I know it had a kind of a birth. You know, what do they call it when you do it the first time? A premiere.
Oh, yes.
A premiere. Did you go to the premiere?
We actually had a private screening.
A private screening.
For the ones that were in the film.
Right.
And a couple of others. So we had already seen it before they did the premiere.
You had a private screening.
Yes, because I actually couldn't go to that because I was sick at that time. Yeah. So, yes, I'd already seen it before it had come out then.
So you didn't wear no red carpets for the premiere?
No.
Nothing. No. And where was the premiere? Do you remember? I think it was the university, wasn't it, or something?
Oh, no? It might have been. Mm. Yes.
Because I remember I was invited, but I was somewhere else. I wasn't in Melbourne. A few people were invited here from 3CR.
Ah, yes. No, well, I was glad that I had seen it. I had originally seen it, yes. Because it was at RMIT, the first screening.
That's right, RMIT. How professional does it look? Does it make you look like that you're real or...
Yes,
not
yes.
characters, not just character
no,
choice?
No, real tenants and a real estate.
Right. So you're quite happy with the way they edited and put things together.
Yes, it was funny. I said they've got me there standing outside my locked gate, and I'm saying scoundrels because they had locked me out. I couldn't get my flowers.
You couldn't get your flowers.
Yeah. So it was a real human story.
Yeah. All right. Look, it's 4:30. We're halfway through our chat. Leif, our silent producer. Won't talk. This is her first time.
Ah, must be challenging.
No, not for Leaf. She did the Anarchist Wheel this week and she was just brilliant.
Oh, wow.
She was brilliant. She's brilliant. She's a natural. A natural. But she won't talk. Unlike Zog over there.
Yeah.
You know, your security guard, he never stops talking, does
he?
Oh,
yes.
I won't ask you how he's going because I can't be bothered.
Oh, he's good.
He's good. Well, this is Radical Australian Community Radio 3CR, streaming live on 3cr.org.au. I'm chatting, not interviewing, with Jeannie, E-R-C-E-G. It is so hard for us Western Europeans to pronounce these East European names.
Oh, I'd like to go back to my maiden name, but if I changed that, I'd have to pay for it, so...
Not only that, could you imagine you'll have to change your Medicare account,
yes, that's
your
a
pension,
thing.
It just goes on and on.
Everything, yes.
It can take years.
Yes, so I'm stuck with it at the moment.
It's just unbelievable how hard it is to change things.
I know. Yeah, so I was trying to – my cat was lost for a couple of months and then somebody had actually found my cat.
Right.
And put my cat on. I was going through Port Melbourne Focus last week, and I saw my cat. They said, "Does anybody know this cat's owner?" Because they'd taken it to a cat rescue place.
Right.
They'd seen that it was microchipped.
Right.
They knew that the owner was Natalie, my daughter, who's in Canada, and myself, but they had old details, so they couldn't contact us.
Yep.
But, of course, I recognised that was my cat. So I said, "Yeah, that's my cat." So she brought her around and said she had been looking after her for a month, and she said, "Well, you should go online and try and change your details into your name," which I tried to do, but I couldn't work out how to do it. I went round and round on the site trying to work out how to change it from the old details of my daughter's name to put the cat in my name.
Mm.
Couldn't work it out.
This public housing struggle, do you think it's worthwhile?
Yes.
Do you think it's gaining traction?
Yes, because the more it becomes known in the media, the more people find out. Because initially at Barrett Beacon, people had heard that the 89 units were going to be demolished and that there were going to be like 400 units there. They said, "That's great." And I said, "No, it's not great because there's no public housing there." And when you explain what's going to be rebuilt there, they said they didn't realise this.
That's right. It's been a very, very effective, you know, I've been involved in this struggle for over a decade. It's really effective propaganda.
Yes.
Confusing people. When they talk about social housing, community housing, affordable housing, whatever you like to call it, people think it's public housing.
That's right. They don't know the difference, so they think that it's just a great thing.
Yeah. And the other thing that happened is when they legislated a number of years ago to actually join the community social housing waiting list with the public housing list. Yeah, because... there's a big estate being built, but it's only three stories, interestingly, down at Hampton.
Oh, right.
And there was a lot of walk-up public housing, which really was in a dreadful state of repair because they weren't doing any repairs.
Yes.
And it's been knocked down. But as I said, it's like the buildings at Barrack Beacon, you know, just concrete block after concrete block.
Well, they had walk-ups in South Yarra, not far from where I used to live, Bank Street, Perrin, and they were all demolished as well.
Yeah. It's interesting the way the government tries to distance itself from the word privatisation. It says, "No, we're only leasing the land for 40 years and then we may release it again to the same people." It's quite fascinating the way they do
but
that.
But they also don't mention that what is being rebuilt will be demolished again in 40 years, that's their plan.
See, and the other thing, I've had a number of community and social housing tenants who've approached us. And what they're concerned about is the private organisations which run them don't do repairs.
I've heard that as well. I mean, maintenance by through the government is bad enough, but if it's even worse on a community, then heaven help everyone.
I mean, you're trying to get a private provider who's there to make a buck to repair.
Yes.
And I've heard stories in Flemington, you know, of wires, you know.
Yes.
You know, live wires.
Yes.
And repairs not being done. And then the other thing you hear about, there's another block in Ashwood that's community housing and private housing.
Yes.
And they're actually not doing any maintenance or even any cleaning.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the private provider says, well, we've subcontracted that out. So what happens is those community and social housing entities subcontract the work out to private providers to do, but they don't actually make sure that the work is done.
Oh.
So there are a lot of issues when you privatise public housing. At least the government, you can pressure them.
Yes. Oh, the other issue is that I've just been aware of that I didn't know before. They also have embedded networks in the units when you go back to them.
What does that mean?
So it means that you can't pick your electricity supplier.
Right.
That the tower that the site tells you which person you're going to be with, and that it's not, you don't pay your bill based on actually how much electricity you use.
That's right, yeah.
I just found that out and I was very shocked how it works.
Yeah, you
That the community, they buy the electricity in bulk and then they sell it to the residents.
Yeah, and they make a profit out of
it too. Yes, so regardless of how much, I was shocked when I found that out.
Yeah, but it's like privatising the maintenance and privatising the cleaning.
Yes.
And what happens is you outsource it to a separate entity.
Yes.
And then you've got no control of the situation because all you can do is complain to the provider.
Yes.
And they say, well, we've given out the contract. There's nothing we can do.
Yes.
And that's what I've been told over and over again. So it's there are a lot of shortcomings to community and affordable housing. Obviously, if you're on a waiting list and you get in, you don't notice these things initially, but you begin to pick them up as time goes on.
Yes, and unfortunately that's what I'm moving back to.
Are you moving back to that?
Well,
are you going to go back to Barrack Beacon?
I have no choice because I pay the same rent that I would at Barrack Beacon.
Right.
If I chose to stay in the house, I'd be giving up a spot in public housing and paying private rental, which I couldn't afford because that's why I'm public housing in the first place.
And the thing is that in another 30 years, you may get another spot in public. Well, there'll be no public housing sector left.
No, I don't think there will be. I think they're just giving it to community housing piece by piece.
Yeah. I think what people don't seem to understand is that this is bad for the community as a whole, not just the tenants, but for the community as a whole.
That's right. Yeah. That's I think what people need to understand.
And the other thing, as I said before, which I'm really, really annoyed about, is the fact that all the organisations that would stand with people who are on limited incomes who needed public housing, the churches mainly, and now got their noses in the trough running a lot of this privatised public housing. And so you don't see them coming up and defending the tenants as you would have 20 or 30 years ago. They would be at the front line. So the only people that are left are basically, you know, radical elements within the community.
That's why it's left to the residents or others that know about these things to speak up.
Yeah. Now, do you hope to go back? I said to Barrack Beacon, you got to go back.
I have to go back.
What does it look like?
Prison. Concrete towers.
Right, and that's the community housing sector.
Yes.
And how about gardens and play areas and that type of thing?
I don't think they thought about that. It's all buildings.
It's all buildings.
Yes, from one end to the other.
Right. And is it mainly one and two bedroom units, do you think?
They said at Paran, and I think it's the same at Barrack Beacon, that they said they need one and two bedroom units more than that's where they need more than one and two bedrooms, especially one bedrooms. Majority would be one bedrooms, smaller lot of two bedrooms, and then only a handful of three bedrooms.
Mm. Reminds me of all those containers you see at the port, stacked one on top of the other.
That's what I just said to Duff yesterday. It's a wonder they don't ship us off to the country in a container. I just said that yesterday.
I'm sure they will shift you off sooner or later. But
the fact is, they said that they were going to build mostly one bedrooms, but the fact is that families came from those areas.
Yep.
And families came from Paran as well. So I don't understand how they can build mostly ones when nearly everyone was family.
Well, obviously they will say to families that were evicted from Barrack Beacon that there's no room available for them, nothing suitable for them.
Yes.
Which is a real tragedy for those people who think they're going to return.
Yes.
Maybe they'll just make it an old A over 55 estate as they do around the place.
Mm.
Yeah. You don't seem too happy about that.
Well, I'm not too happy about them building there anyway, what they've built, but I have to move back.
I have to move back. Now, is the film available? Can people actually access the film?
Yes, it was online how you could access it.
Mm. And what do you put in, Barrack Beacon?
Yes, I think it was www.barrackbeacon.
Right.
Yes.
So if people want to look at it, they can actually access it, you think?
I'm not sure whether that was just for community groups that wanted to film the film.
Right, right.
Right. I'm not sure that you can actually go online and actually see the film yourself.
But if you're a community group and you want to show the film, yes.
Right.
You think it's worthwhile showing?
Yes, because it shows the residents there, it shows the humanity.
Well, that you're real people.
Yes.
You're not caricatures.
Yes. And this is just one estate that will be happening everywhere else.
Well, it is happening as we speak.
Yes,
as I said.
I mean, the towers, they've got their eyes on the towers, but they will have their eyes on all the other estates.
Yeah, the thing about public housing in the past is that it was built around the city.
Yes.
And it was built in, as you said, there was units in South Yarra.
Yes.
And a lot of this real estate is now very expensive and the government thinks it could make a bit of money out of it. What do you think about the idea of using stamp duty revenue, because the government will make about $10 to $12 billion this year from stamp duty revenue. So if you buy a home, you've got to pay stamp duty.
Yes.
And it can be, I think it's up to $50,000 for a $500,000 home.
Really?
And so there's a tax on housing.
Yes.
But they put it into consolidated revenue. They don't actually use it
for
housing. Now, if you could use that for public housing, we've always said public housing, everybody's business, that if you could do that for public housing, you could actually... You could just spot purchase. You didn't even have to build. You could actually house 100,000 people every year.
That's what they should do. But, of course, the government does whatever they want to do.
Yeah, and it's difficult when you've got an opposition which is not interested in public housing. They would accelerate the privatisation process.
Trouble is, they all live in their own places and they really don't care about people.
Well, it's not only they live in their own places, they've also got units they rent out.
Yes, I don't think they're too interested in the people that haven't got anywhere to go. I mean, as myself, I'm a single mother, so if I didn't have public housing, I wouldn't have anything.
No, and your children wouldn't have the advantages they had by being in a stable environment.
That's right.
Yeah,
so
it's very difficult.
You need to think about others and not just...
You're kidding.
What suits them, which I don't think they're going to do anytime soon.
You need to think about others. Oh, come on.
That's why they've had the vigil up at 12 Fallon Court, because they're thinking of the residents there and the future residents of the other estates that are going to be demolished.
Right. I think they'll run out of steam. Not the protesters, but the actual government. It's a big project they've set themselves.
Yeah, well, we'll wait and see.
Wait and see, because I'd like to see the expense they're going to outsourcing the residents, many in private housing. I heard about a family unit was from Barrack Beacon that put their foot down, and they've actually now kind of living in Beaumaris in a nice, I think, four-bedroom house.
Well, someone I know got their... bought them a house in Port Melbourne for $1.1 million.
That's the government.
Yes.
They bought the house.
Yes.
And added to the public housing stock.
Yes.
It seems like it's more of an ideological agenda than an agenda to help people who can't afford private housing or private rents. It seems more like they're working ideology, you know, wash their hands of, as you said in the beginning, wash their hands of providing housing for people in the state who find it difficult.
Yes.
I don't know if you heard yesterday, there's the mayor of Geelong, he was talking about building pods for homeless people, which sounds quite good.
Yes.
You know, overnight accommodation, secure accommodation, but not a word about putting pressure on the state government to provide more public housing in those areas, you know. You know, people looking at all these, and everybody was saying what a wonderful solution this is to the problem. And the problem was that the homeless in Geelong were actually clogging up the War Memorial and other places.
Well, if they provided public housing in the first place or they kept it, then you wouldn't have this going on.
And especially if you got spot purchase public housing, because if they're willing to spend $1.1 million.
I know, I couldn't believe it.
You can buy a home for $500,000 in Cranbourne West, which is near the railway station. I mean, and the government, see, what people forget is if there's a large number of public housing, what it means is less people need to rent.
Yes.
And if less people need to rent, what happens is investors move out of the market because they're not making enough money. And if investors move out of the market, say maybe go into the share market, rents will drop.
Yes.
And at the same time, real estate prices for at the lower end of the market will drop and allow maybe a young couple to actually, you know, enter a mortgage.
Yes.
So it has all these ramifications, having competition in the sector where the public housing sector is competing with the private housing sector to provide housing, you know, secure housing. But if you leave it all up to the private sector, which is happening now, I can imagine that in a few years' time you'll hear the community housing associations and the affordable housing associations saying, we can't make any money, we need to increase the rent.
Yes.
Because they're already doing that. They're saying, they say to the government, well, we're going to go bankrupt and all these people are going to be evicted because they get the title to the house. And this is what people forget is when the government turns it over to a community housing sector or affordable housing sector, they get the titles, then they use the titles to get money to build more community housing.
Right.
But that puts them under pressure because they've got to pay interest on those loans.
Yes.
And the government, this is the funny thing, is the state government guarantees the loan to the private sector. So it just goes on and on. It's just crazy.
Yeah, well, and the fact that if they're going to demolish all the public housing towers, all the people are going to go to, I don't know where, private rentals or whatever stock they have left. But it's not going to reduce the wait list. How is anybody going to get anything?
Nobody gets on the wait. Nobody gets
anything.
Nobody
is going to be able to move off the wait list if they continue that they're going to demolish all the towers.
Yeah, well, I know an Aboriginal man who's been homeless now for 10 years.
Oh.
And although the Aboriginal corporation was given handed over the titles to the public houses to... The fact is there's just no space, there's no room because there's no expansion of the public housing sector.
That's the thing.
And, you know, you hear stories about people being on the waiting list for 30 years. Could you imagine that?
I know. Well, I was on the wait list for 10 years.
10?
And that was back, a while ago. So
how many kids? You had six. You're looking
seven.
Out. Seven. And you're on the waiting list for 10 years.
Yes.
And you weren't considered to be a priority.
No.
10 years.
So I don't know how anybody would get a place now.
No, they don't. They don't. And that's why they talk about creating pods, you know, for urgent overnight accommodation or little houses, all that
tiny houses. Yeah, well,
all that type
of
stuff.
It's only going to get worse.
Yeah. Well, it will get worse if we don't get people involved.
Yes.
So tell us about the vigils of the Flemington Estate. What time and the days they're on?
So they're Monday to Friday.
Right.
So they're held every morning, 7:30 to 9.
Mm.
So they have banners that they keep in a storage locker across the road from the estate.
Right.
So someone goes there, collects the banners, and then whoever's there, they hold the banners up until 9 o'clock by the road so the cars get to see the banners and read what's on it.
Mm.
And then sometimes in the afternoon, not every afternoon, I'm not sure which days, but 4:30 to 6, they have the vigil again there at Flemington.
Right, right. And obviously anybody's welcome.
Oh, yes, anybody that wants to turn up,
As long as they bring some buns or a cup of coffee, it'd be useful. If you're
standing but they usually have snacks there to keep them going.
They keep them
7:30
going.
Can be quite early.
It can be quite early, But...
And then, of course, I will go to the other... High rises next on the list.
Yeah. Do you know which one's next on the list?
Court.
Oh, I'm sure that.
There's three of them that they're keeping their eyes on now. Now I've forgotten, I've just gone blank.
Well, and they're moving people out of them now?
Yes, I've already started to relocate them.
Yeah. And are they relocating people in the country, do you think?
I've got no idea where they're where they're going to.
Because they'd what? They'd be how many people do you think would be in a tower? Well, there's
a lot.
There's a at least 1,000, wouldn't there?
Yes, I would imagine so.
And some of them, as you said, English isn't their
English isn't their first language. Yeah. I would say a majority of them.
So you've got waves of refugees coming across.
Yes.
You've got the Chileans, which came across in the 70s. Then you had people from Bosnia-Herzegovina who
yes.
came across. Many of them went back. Then you've got Somalians who came across.
Yes.
You've got people from Hong Kong who've come across. And and they've been there, what, for years and years and years.
Yes, so they've made their place their home.
That's their home.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, if people are listening and they do own their own home or they're paying off a mortgage, how would they feel if somebody knocks on their door and says, or even if you're in rental accommodation and says, oh, I'm going to get the kids to move back into the house, so you're going to have to move in the next 6 weeks, which is a totally legal thing they can do
yes.
with rental accommodation. I think what people need to understand who are listening is the fact that at any time, if you're a public housing resident with this crazy ideological vendetta, whatever
yes.
you like to call it, that people who've been there for generations
yes.
are shipped out. Now, I understand at Barrack Beacon there was a big campaign to remodel.
Yes.
And there was no interest from the government in that?
I don't think they took any notice, but Office had prepared a study. They had done a study on the fact that it could be redeveloped and the government could save so many millions of dollars by implementing the plans that the government wanted to do and still have more units there, but I don't think the government
That's right.
even looked at it.
No, they've got their plans.
Yes.
And these relocation units, as they call them, they're pretty powerful, aren't they?
Oh, you mean the relocation offices?
Yeah. Or you can blow them over with a puff of wind. What do you reckon?
Oh, no, some of them can be, they're quite, I don't know what the word is.
Yeah, because we saw what happened in Northcote.
Yes.
If you go there,
yes.
it's a concrete jungle now.
Yes.
And if people go to Hampton along, I think it's Bluff Road in Hampton,
yes.
across the road from the football ground, you can see what's been built there.
Yes.
It's interesting that in Hampton, where there's more community resistance to
yes.
high-rise buildings, they're only building to 3 stories.
Ah.
While in Port Melbourne, they've shot up to 9 stories.
Yeah, see, I think 3 stories is acceptable. I think once you get to 9 and 11 stories, it looks a bit like the towers again.
Yeah.
A mini estate.
A mini estate. And the thing is, the lifts always break down.
That's the thing, yes. So, yes, because I know when I was living in Bang Street, Paran, I was on the ground floor, so I didn't have to rely on the lift, but I knew that the lift had broken down many times.
Yeah, and maintenance. So do you think they just let Barrack Beacon run down? They knew they were going to...
Yes, absolutely.
You think it's not... They didn't make that decision when they started knocking on the door that the plans had been in...
Yeah,
going
I think
for
the plans
have
been in the works beforehand,
yeah.
and so they just let everything slide. I mean, I couldn't believe that they'd actually fixed my balcony
with the imported tiles
and then demolished it. So that didn't seem to make sense. But I think in general, yes, their plan was they knew years before that was going to be demolished, and so they just let everything slide so that they could use that as an excuse.
Because that's prime real estate.
Opposite the beach.
So they're going to sell those homes and that money will go into the ones at the front and that money will go into the state government coffers. Yeah.
It's terrible.
Well, it is. And I think they've been very effective in their propaganda. I'll give you an example. You know our beloved Prime Minister, Mr. Albanese, brought up in social housing by a single mother on a pension, see how far he's got.
Yes.
When he was first elected as Prime Minister, he kept using the word public housing.
Yes.
And then he was re-educated by his team and he started using the term social housing.
Right.
He began to understand the difference. Yeah. And what you're describing is the same is happening in Sydney, the Rocks, Woolloomooloo, all those areas.
It's happening all over Australia.
Unfortunately. Yeah. And people don't seem to understand what's happening because it's not just an effect on you, it's an effect on the whole community.
That's right. I think really it's like the beginning of the end.
For what? No, not for life on earth.
For public housing, for in general, there'll probably come a time when there won't be any at all.
Well, I think people are going to understand that increasing housing prices, increasing rents, are directly linked to the lack of public housing. Yes. If you've got a strong public housing sector,
yes,
owned by the government of the day, managed by the government of the day, you're not going to need so many people fighting to get a private roof over their heads. I mean, I think it's Austria. Yes. I think it's 45% of houses in Vienna are public homes.
Yes.
And I know in France that if you live in a public unit,
yes,
and you die, you can leave in your will for your one of your children and their family to move into that same unit and their public homes, which they've been in for generations. It is amazing. It's a matter of looking at housing not as an investment.
Yes. Well, they don't. That's what they look at it, though. They look at it as an investment, money.
Yeah.
It's not people, it's money.
I mean, if you go to Thailand and you're a foreigner, you can't buy residential property.
Ah.
So there's a lot of countries where you cannot buy, if you're a foreigner, you're not a citizen, you cannot buy residential property. But as you said, if you make it into an investment and it's open slather to anybody, now people are going to come in and invest in housing.
Yes.
And the only good thing that I can see is that housing prices are beginning to stabilise.
Yes.
And maybe they'll come down. But I don't think they'll come down unless there's a very strong public housing sector. So you see, the thing is, today, as you know, everybody thinks that public is second rate.
Yeah.
And it's second rate because there's no money put into it.
Yes.
And there's no maintenance, as you said.
That's right, yes.
Yeah. And, you know, little ghettos of people who society just tolerates, you know.
That's right. That's the thing. They just tolerate them.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're not tolerating you, Journey.
Oh, that's nice.
It was very nice of you to come in a second time to discuss the situation.
My pleasure. I said any time that I can speak up about public housing and what's actually going on is a good thing.
I think the fact that you've been moved three times now.
Well, it's twice. It will be shortly three times.
And the fact that you're forced to go back.
Yes.
Although the whole estate, the nature of the estate has changed.
Oh, well, it'd be the same address but completely different.
All right. Maybe you should ask for the title. I mean, in the past, I've had patients who've done this. They could actually buy the house they were in.
Yes.
The rent would go towards paying off. It wouldn't just be rent. To buy the actual house.
Yeah, what a great idea.
Yeah, it used to happen. And these things can happen, but it needs political will. And it's not just about, you know, what people look like, you know, if they're photogenic leaders. But the thing is, it's about what they do.
Yes.
You know, what we seem to be doing in Victoria is we love to dig holes in the ground.
Mm. Unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, we've seen a miracle today, Jeannie.
Really?
Yeah. Duff. He hasn't said a word. That is a miracle. Duff will give you 10 seconds to say a word if you wish, or you can still be a miracle man. I think Leaf has kind of cast her spell on you, and that's why you're not talking.
Scribbling down notes, you'd be impressed that the investors are, you know, with more public housing.
That's it. Yeah.
The investors will
move out.
Will move out.
Interesting.
That's a good argument because people, you can't just argue we should have public housing.
Exactly.
You've got to talk economics.
I say public housing is everybody's business. You've got kids who can't buy a home. Yes. More public housing, more private housing available for them.
Yeah.
Prices go down. It's simple. It's so simple that even an idiot like me can understand. You know, and an idiot like you, Duff. We've been given the finger by the producer, one finger, 1 minute to go. Look, thank you very much for coming in. We will podcast this. Do not run away. Leaf is going to take another photograph of you, which we'll put up on the podcast. And is there any Facebook page or anything you'd like to recommend?
No, there's different groups online.
Yeah, just look up Public Housing Resistance. Yeah, Public Housing Resistance, something will come up.
Yes, there's all different groups. They're all fighting for the same thing.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Duff, for making sure the guest was here on time. We appreciate that.
Oh, just got here, Mother. It's getting on my teeth.
We were about to disappear. I've been given 10 fingers.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.